I did not have that in my pocket. You must have put it there.
He bucked against the soldiers, trying to free himself, and one of them clamped an arm around his neck to subdue him. Owen stood by the princess, watching with building interest as Elizabeth's grandfather unfolded the note and started reading it aloud.
Master Ratcliffe, long has my master desired to earn your good opinion. Rumor crosses our borders that your master has a new fountain blessed, a little brat from Kiskadden. Please arrange an accident to remove this threat to us. In return, you will inherit the lordship of one of our many pleasant estates on your borders, with income received from the king's coffers annually. Be quick, Master Ratcliffe. Your prompt cooperation will be amply rewarded.
Horwath's frown and boiling anger intensified as he read.
Yours, etc., Gray.
Ratcliffe's face turned as white as milk. The king rose to his feet, his look so full of wrath and disappointment that it made Owen cower.
How could you? You turn traitor, Dickon,
the king said in a husky whisper.
You, above all, know my heart. You, above all, have shared my history. I am not sure I can trust anyone now. For greed or gold. Was it worth it, old friend?
His hand closed against his dagger hilt, and for a brief instant, Owen feared the king would plunge the blade into Ratcliffe's heart.
My lord,
Mancini said politely. The king turned his savage gaze to the Genovese man.
There was an incident, quite recently, when I discovered little Owen and the Duke's granddaughter at play. Well, to be honest, they were being rather naughty, and had found their way into the palace cistern. I happened to tell Master Ratcliffe this fact shortly thereafter, and, well, rather coincidentally, the gate winches of the cistern drain were tugged on. That's why the palace ran out of water. The two children were nearly swept into the river. I had no proof it was not an accident, of course. Until now. I thought I might mention it.
Ratcliffe's face turned green, and he hung his head as if all his strength had failed him. The king stared at Owen in mixed surprise and horror.
Is this true, lad?
Owen stared at the king purposefully. He nodded and then looked at Duke Horwath. Mancini saved both of us. He broke down the door and caught us before we went over the falls.
By the fountain!
The king exclaimed. He knelt in front of Owen and mussed the boy's hair, looking at him with wonder and the utmost relief.
Is this true? Were you spared the horrors of it? I almost cannot bear to look at you without weeping anew.
It took him a moment to master his emotions. Then the king rose like a thunderhead, and when he next spoke, his voice was full of menace and warning.
You desire wealth and fame like a sick man craves his drink. But you were not meant for so much power, Dickon. You are as inept as you are ambitious. This message reeks of the smell of Aquitania, the nation that has always sought our overthrow and humiliation. For this, you would have murdered two innocent children, just like Bletchley. How could you, man? How could you?
His jaw was clenched with rage.
My Lord Duke of Northumbria, acting as Chief Justice, arrest this man of high treason and commit his body to the waters. May the fountain spare his life if he be innocent, or bury him in the deep fathoms with all the moldering treasures of the world for him to feast his greedy eyes on without being able to touch once his skin turns to bones. Out of my sight!
The soldiers hauled up Ratcliffe, but his legs no longer seemed to work. His face dripped with so much sweat that he looked like a melting candle. Duke Horwath, stiff and imperious, stood in front of him.
I arrest you, on grounds of high treason, by the name of Dickon, Lord Ratcliffe of Brent.
He grabbed the chain of office around Ratcliffe's neck and snapped it, then hurled it to the floor like refuse. That done, he smacked Ratcliffe across the face so hard it rocked his head back. He nodded curtly to the soldiers to drag him away, and as they did, Owen heard the man sobbing. The king's frown was fierce and determined. He stared after Ratcliffe, his heart closing with another wound.
Uncle, I am so sorry, Princess Elise murmured. But in truth, I am not surprised. I have had fears for Owen's life since he came to King Fountain.
She came and stood behind Owen, resting her hands on his shoulders.
That is why I asked if I could look after him.
The king nodded at her words.
I should have listened to you, niece. I should have heeded your counsel. I would have you near me to always give me your advice, to help me steer this ship of state. You are wise beyond your years. I would value your suggestions.
The princess smiled, pleased.
I would like that, uncle.
She squeezed Owen's shoulders.
So may I look after him now?
The king smiled wanly and then shook his head.
No, Elise.
But why not? What are you going to do with him?
Her voice had an edge of worry.
Indeed. What will I do with him?
The king muttered calmly. His gray eyes were serious and intense as he looked into Owen's.
I will make him into a duke, a lord of the realm. He will need to be taught, he will need to be trained. When I was 9, my brother made me the Duke of Gloucester, and I was sent to the north to be trained by my uncle Warwick. After the Assizes, I will name Owen the Duke of Westmarch, and he will be sent to the north under the wardship of my faithful friend, who knows the price of loyalty. There is a little granddaughter, I believe, who was recently sent back to Cumbria.
The Duke's stern mouth broke into a smile.
She is, Your Grace. She was. I think a season or two up in the north would strengthen this little pup. Make a man out of him. Then I give his wardship to you, Steve. Make a man out of him. Make a lord out of him.
The king stared at Owen with kindness.
For your parents' treason, I will pardon them for your sake, Owen. They will never be permitted back to Ceredigion on pain of death, but I will not forbid you from seeing them. My Lord Duke, when you draw up the attainder, please be sure that Owen is excluded. I will, Your Grace.
The Duke was still smiling, and Owen could imagine why. The king knelt down on the ground and picked up the broken chain and badge that Horwath had thrown down. He rose, staring at the fine workmanship of the badge, the symbol of the rose and star made of gold. Then he looked warily at Mancini.
For now,
the king said, with almost a threat in his voice, and offered the medallion to him.
Your Grace,
Mancini replied meekly, bowing. Owen hurried back to his bedchamber, and his heart gave a shiver and a lurch when he found it empty. His heart was boiling inside. Ready to burst with relief, he had to tell her.
Anchoret,
Owen whispered, carefully padding to the other side of the bed. He found a blood stain on the floor. His heart was hammering faster and faster.
Anchoret,
he whispered again.
She was gone. Owen.
Her voice was so soft, muffled, he almost didn't hear it. But it came from under the bed. Owen dropped to his knees and looked and found her curled up under the bed frame. her head resting on her arm. Afraid, he crawled under the bed beside her. Her face was pale, her eyelids purple and bruised. She looked so weak and tired, as though she lacked the strength to even move.
"Are you hurt?" he asked.
"I'm very sick, Owen,"
she whispered, her voice so faint that he had to bring his ear near her mouth to hear her.
"I've been sick for months."
"But you will get better now,"
Owen said, his mouth tightening into a frown.
"No, Owen,"
she sighed deeply. Very slowly, she lifted her fingers and grazed his hair.
"Tell me what happened."
He swallowed some tears before they could spill. His throat was thick and tight. He burrowed himself against her. She felt cold. Her hand limply stroked his hair.
"I'm going to be a duke," he stammered. "Duke Kiskaden, like my father. The king is giving me Westmarch, but I'm going north first to be with Evie and trained by her grandfather. I'm not going to see you again, am I?"
"Shh,"
she soothed.
"I'm going to the deep fathoms now, where I can rest, where I can sleep without pain. Shh, don't cry."
He was crying. The tears were hot against his cheeks.
"I don't want you to go," he moaned. "You need to keep teaching me. I can't do this without you. I am fountain blessed, Angret. You were right about me. The king tried using his magic on me, and I turned it back on him. I felt it. So did he. Someone sent Ratcliffe to kill me. I need you, Anchoret."
She was quiet for a while, so still it felt as if she wasn't breathing. Her hand still stroked his hair. He sobbed quietly into her, burying his face in her gown. She let him grieve, gently patting his back.
"I know about Ratcliffe's message,"
Anchoret said, her voice quiet and distant.
"I put it in his pocket last night at the inn. It was hidden among his papers."
She paused, struggling for breath.
"Owen, remember how I said that secrets always try to get out? Do you remember that?"
"Mm-hmm,"
he said, hardly able to speak through his tears. He looked up at her face, and the loving smile he saw there made his heart hurt even more.
"There's one more in my heart trying to get out. I think it's been keeping me from dying, but I need to let it out now."
She sighed, her eyes closing as if she were falling asleep or dying.
"I was trained to be a poisoner from a midwife. That's common, actually."
Her hand strokes were getting slower.
"So many of the herbs and medicines that can save can also kill. One of my favorites is nightshade. It's used in childbirth when the mother has too much pain."
Her voice trailed off again.
"Anchoret,"
Owen pleaded, shaking her gently. Her eyes fluttered open.
"Nightshade has many purposes. I used it on Ratcliffe last night. He told me his secrets. He told me about the letter. But when it wears off, you can't remember what you did, what you said. That's how I tricked Ratcliffe into forgetting. That's how I learned what was in the book. But that's not my secret."
Her voice thickened with pain.
"When you were stillborn, I was the midwife who helped your mother, for you. You've always been precious to me, Owen. I had to give you some of my magic for you to live. I learned when you give of the magic, it grows stronger. Remember that. I've tried to help you the best I could. Now you must use your magic to help others. Remember.
Her hand slipped down. She had no strength left.
Anchoret,
Owen moaned, taking her hand and squeezing it. Her eyelashes fluttered. She stared at him, blinking dreamily. The sad smile was gone. Her expression was full of peace.
I love you, he whispered, kissing her cheek. I love you, my little prince,
she whispered back thickly. Then her eyes shut, and her last breath sighed out.
Where is that little brat?
Mancini muttered from the doorway. When Owen heard the voice, his little heart shriveled like a prune.
Down here,
he called, pulling himself from under the bed. He rose, disheveled, but the tears were all gone now.
You've been crying,
Mancini said, aghast.
After all the king has given you, you've been crying?
Anchoret is dead.
Mancini frowned.
It's a miracle she was not dead hours ago. She was knifed several times after she snuck into Ratcliffe's room at the inn. To think it was all part of her plan.
Owen glared at him.
She's under the bed, Mancini. I need your help. I can't lift her on my own. She needs to go back to the fountain. We need to get her into a boat.
Mancini sighed.
Lad, that's just out of the question. I just became the temporary head of the Espeon. I'm not about to lose it on some risky gamble with a corpse.
No, Owen said. She needs to go back to the fountain. A boat, Mancini. You need to arrange for a boat. She needs to go back to the fountain.
Mancini stared at Owen as if he were being childish.
I am not superstitious, boy. All this talk of gurgling waters and dreams is a bunch of nonsense. We both know that. Anchoret Trinneawee was the most cunning woman living, as far as I'm concerned. But she's dead now, and I wash my hands of her.
Owen was furious. He wanted to command Mancini to obey him, but he knew that people forced against their will were not persuaded. He needed to outthink Mancini, to maneuver his actions as if this were a game of wiser. He felt a little trickle rippling through him. An idea came.
If you will do this for me, I will give you a stipend from my duchy, independent of the king,
Owen said flatly, folding his arms. The man stared at him in surprise.
A stipend, you say? How much would this stipend entail, to be precise?
A number came to Owen's mind.
50 florins a year, in Genovese coins.
Again, Mancini looked startled.
My young man, you have yourself a bargain. I like how you think. You and I are going to be great friends from now on. It was a tender farewell between the Kiskadden brat and his family. Even I found myself dabbing an eye with a kerchief. The Assizes were a dreadful affair, with evidence brought, witnesses testifying, and verdicts rendered. There was a collective gasp of fearful breath when Duke Horwath read the guilty verdict against Lord and Lady Kiskadden, followed by much weeping and anguish. They were beloved in Westmarch. But they gambled that King Severn would fail when they supported the pretender before Ambion Hill. When you gamble, you often lose. Now imagine, if you will, how the despair turned to joy when the king pronounced the punishment. Lord and Lady Kiskadden and their sons and daughters would be banished from Ceredigion instead of meeting their fate at a river like Dickon Ratcliffe. And then the king proclaimed that their youngest son, the little brat, would inherit the duchy at 8 years old. The tears of anguish turned to tears of rejoicing. Not a dry eye when the lad hugged his parents and kissed them in farewell. Except for Horwath, that man is made of stone. But what was even more pleasurable was knowing the outcome before the masses did. This is the way of politics and power. This is what I was born for.
Dominique Mancini, Master of the Espion. Chapter 38. The North. Owen had never been to the North before, and he was unprepared for the sights awaiting him. He rode on the back of the Duke's horse, as he had many times before, clutching the Duke's cloak. Owen's toes were freezing in his fur-lined boots, and despite several layers of tunics, he still felt like shivering. His cheeks were pink, his nose hurt, but he stared in awe at the snow-capped mountains that rose in majestic plinths as far as the eye could see. This was a land with few farms, many rocks, and wild goats. And waterfalls. Owen was amazed at the huge waterfalls that roared down from the icy peaks, the sound a welcoming anthem to his senses. The horses of the Duke and his men lumbered into a mountain valley, wedged between colossal shelves of rock and ice, exposing a huge castle and town in the heart of it. A mammoth waterfall cascaded from behind the castle, spellbinding in height and majesty. Even from their position, Owen could see a bridge at the crest of the falls, putting him in mind of a story Evie had once told him.
"Oh," the boy uttered reverently, seeing the sights, feeling a prick of pain from his freezing nose.
"It's a tranquil place," the Duke said with a chuckle, "except when my granddaughter is around."
Owen turned around and saw the soldiers accompanying them. Some bore the banners of the arrow-pierced lion. Some bore the blue shields and golden bucks of Kiskadon. They were Owen's men, his captains and ancients and counselors, who would bear his orders back to the duchy and bring word to him in the mountains when his orders were fulfilled. The mountain air was absolutely delicious. As the horses reached the outer walls of the town, the trumpets from the castle sounded and the townsfolk began to crowd around them, cheering the two dukes they had heard were coming. Owen wore the glittering collar of his rank, the symbol of his power. He wore the badge now. He was the youngest duke in the realm, and it was all Anchorette's doing. In the weeks that had passed since her body had been entrusted to the waters, he had thought of her often. He would always remember her. And with those memories, he had feelings and secrets he could share with no one else. No one except the girl waiting for them at the castle ahead. Owen reached into his pocket and felt her crumpled braid and squeezed it. As they reached the drawbridge of the castle, she could contain herself no longer. Owen saw Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer running down the wooden planks, squealing with happiness as she saw her grandfather and Owen riding up to meet her.
"Go, lad," the grizzled Duke said to Owen, giving him a wink.
And by the time he had dropped down from the saddle, Evie had reached him and hugged him so hard he thought he might start crying for the first time in weeks.
"Owen! Owen Kiskadon! My Owen!"
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Queen's Poisoner by Jeff Wheeler. Performed by Kate Rudd. Engineered by Alex Jackson. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.